Blog Talk Radio.
Be careful of those who grow silent during your season of celebration. It's amazing how people like you until it gets good. People don't mind being with you as long as they feel like y'all on the same level. But the minute your lifting comes, the minute God begins to make it very clear that his hand is upon your life, look around and watch those who grow silent. Watch those who stop clapping. Watch those who start speaking negatively about you. Watch those who stop coming. Watch people who always try to compare what they have to what you have. Watch people who always try to lift themselves in the conversation. Watch people who are always in competition with you. Watch those people who will not give you a compliment no matter what, especially when God begins to lift you. If somebody cannot be genuinely happy for you, these are the type of people you absolutely do not need in your life. They don't call, they don't show up, and they stop applauding because they're slick jealous of what God is doing in your life. You do not need those people around. Be mindful of those people and definitely don't call them friend.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Gary Hines.
Welcome to the Hair Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. He's the host with the most, Mr. Gary Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank our Carapi Hair Products, Hair Nation Expo events, Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or shout-out during the show. We're here each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show. We'll be right back.
One in a Million, the history of Madam C.J. Walker and her entrepreneurial legacy. Not even her poor and difficult beginnings stymied Madam Walker's road to greatness. Born December 23, 1867, roughly 2 years after the alleged emancipation of her race, she was an orphan at 7, a wife at 14, a mother at 17, and a widow by 20. The woman who would become known as the first self-made female millionaire and the greatest benefactress of her race was born the daughter of Owen and Minerva Breedlove, poor ex-slaves living on a cotton farm in Louisiana. They named their special little girl Sarah Breedlove. A washerwoman by trade, at the age of 33 in 1900, Sarah began selling a product door to door which she had formulated to remedy her own hair loss. She pinpointed the root of her hair problems, which was the scalp, and created hair care products and a beauty regimen for hair growth and maintenance that focused on the need for a clean and healthy scalp, scalp protection, and scalp stimulation for maximum hair growth. Her first product would eventually be called Madam C.J. Walker's Wonderful Hair Grower, and she boldly and proudly used her own likeness on her jars and her own before and after pictures to demonstrate her product's effectiveness. Per Madam's own words, she abhorred the impression held by some that she claimed to straighten hair. She emphatically stated, "I grow hair," and that there would be no hair-growing business today had I not started it. She described her concept and method of hair growth as beauty culture because she compared growing hair to growing and cultivating garden plants. She then broadened this concept of beauty culture by incorporating the value of cleanliness and professionalism, which emphasized the overall appearance, moral conduct, and character of the Black woman. Black women from all over the country began writing letters to Madam Walker attesting to the benefits of her products. By setting up a special correspondence course of beauty culture in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and then a manufacturing facility in Indiana, and later a beauty college in New York City, Madam was able to further establish and promulgate her program of beauty culture, which trained the Black female in three areas. First, the Black woman was taught the proper presentation of herself. She was to be clean, neat, properly attired, and well-mannered. Second, she was taught how to use Madam's hair care system on customers. And third, she was taught how to sell Madam's hair care products to customers. In so doing, Madam C.J. Walker provided a solution to the root of the Black woman's demise. She raised the Black woman's self-esteem and confidence about her own beauty and intelligence, and she empowered the Black woman economically, thus freeing her from white servitude and male dependency. This accomplishment is even more amazing when put in the context of the time in which these things were done and in the context of Madam's own background. The time, one historian called the nadir, or lowest point in the history of the Black race, outside of slavery itself. The blessings of freedom was now marred by the blatant terrorist acts of the Ku Klux Klan and those like-minded individuals working in collusion with them. The harsh reality faced by the vast majority of Blacks living in this era was that the number of lynchings peaked during the early 1900s. As did other backlashes sparked by Reconstruction, such as the burning of Black churches and schools and the establishment of Jim Crow laws. During this dark period, most Black women were either sharecroppers or washerwomen and house servants for whites. Madam Walker was no exception, but she was, however, exceptional. Madam Walker moved her ever-expanding special correspondence course business, founded on her system of beauty culture, to Indianapolis, Indiana, on February 19, 1910. She then purchased and paid for her home, adjoining which was a factory and laboratory, located at 640 North West Street. She endeared herself to the citizens of Indianapolis when she contributed $1,000 to the establishment of the Senate Avenue YMCA. It is reported that she was the only woman to make such a donation. Madam herself, when referring to the YMCA donation, had this to say, quote, "In referring to that $1,000 gift, I don't want you to lay so much stress on it, and do not say that I am the only one. You might say that I was the first and caused others to awaken to the sense of their duty in helping deserving causes for the benefit of the race," end quote. Not long after her move to Indianapolis, Madam Walker also became a member of Bethel AME Church, one of the oldest and most influential churches in the black community, to which Madam Walker contributed generously. In less than 2 years after moving to Indianapolis, on September 2, 1911, Madam C.J. Walker petitioned the Indiana Secretary of State to become incorporated, and on September 19, 1911, exactly 1 year and 7 months since her arrival in Indianapolis, the Madam C.J. Walker Manufacturing Company of Indiana Incorporated was established, Madam Walker naming herself president and owner of all 1,000 shares of stock. A relentless worker and ingenious marketer and saleswoman, Madam Walker had thought to place her system of hair care products in black colleges all across the United States. She also regularly advertised in black newspapers, and she eventually placed her products in drugstores. As she traveled throughout the country, she wrote letters to her general manager in order to instruct him on how best to run her factory in her absence and how to implement all of her new ideas. However, the Madam Walker agents, Madam's recruited sales force, were her biggest asset. Madam held public meetings in churches, rented lodge halls and other such facilities, and put on demonstrations, including a slide presentation, in order to recruit black women to become Walker agents. Madam Walker taught and trained them in the methods of application and proper use of her hair oils and vegetable shampoo. Eventually, Madam organized a national convention for her Walker agents, giving away prizes and other incentives to motivate and energize her ever-growing troops of Walker agents. Sales generated from Madam Walker's manufacturing company and the hair care products it produced enabled Madam to give birth to yet another legacy, as Madam became known as the greatest benefactress of her race. Through monies earned and derived from Madam's work in the hair-growing business, Madam Walker regularly donated large sums of money to charity and to individuals of her race who were in need. In fact, Madam was so self-sacrificing and freely giving that those closest to her were worried that she would become financially ruined. Desiring all blacks to have decent homes, at times, Madam would assume mortgages of blacks who were financially strapped, allowing them to repay when and how they could. Various schools for blacks and certain social and civic organizations dedicated to the betterment of the black race were also beneficiaries of Madam's philanthropy. Though many have called Madam extravagant, her generosity and passion for her people were Madam's only extravagances. She gave not for self-aggrandizement, but rather to inspire other wealthy blacks to give likewise. Moreover, Madam's giving went well beyond monetary donations. She lent her name and time to worthy causes. She traversed the country, speaking against lynchings, and fought vehemently for the fair treatment of black soldiers who had served in America's military during World War I. Madam C.J. Walker was an ambassador of sorts, a spokesperson for all black-skinned people, a revolutionary, visionary, missionary force. It should therefore be quite obvious that Madam Walker's passing on May 25, 1919 was a tremendous loss to the black race. At that time, Madam had recruited over 25,000 black women from the United States, Central America and the Caribbean as door-to-door beauty culturist and was well on her way to Africa. Her net worth was over $1 million, making her the first female, regardless of color, to become a self-made millionaire. She is one of the most successful black entrepreneurs of all time and one of the first to utilize the method known today as direct sales marketing to distribute her products. She had also managed to build a 32-room mansion in Irvington, New York called Villa Loaro, which she had desired to be left as a monument to her name and as an example to her race of what hard work and black support of black enterprises could achieve. After Madam's 1919 passing, her hair care manufacturing corporation was used as collateral to secure the finances needed to build what is today known as the Madam Walker Theater Building. Completed in late 1927, the Walker Building Beauty Salon continues to operate there and continues to sell Madam C.J. Walker's original hair care products. Years later, in 1982, the trustees of Madam Walker's trust would deposit a large portion of Madam C.J. Walker Manufacturing Company's business records, historical documents, pictures, and memorabilia with the Indiana Historical Society, who took on the task of painstakingly organizing and preserving the Madam Walker legacy. 74 years after the incorporation of the Madam Walker Company in 1985, the 1,000 shares of capital stock of Madam's corporation were sold to a man named Raymond L. Randolph, making him the first person since Madam Walker herself to own all 1,000 shares of stock in the original Madam Walker Company. A graduate of Attucks High School, Mr. Randolph had never dreamed that he would become the owner and caretaker of this phenomenal legacy. In honor of Madam C.J. Walker, Mr. Randolph placed Madam Walker's image back on the jars of her original hair care products with the words, "Since 1911," placed underneath it. Doing business today as Madam C.J. Walker Enterprises Incorporated, the hair care company founded by Madam C.J. Walker continues to manufacture and sell her original quality products, ensuring that the legacy of this remarkable woman never dies. The Madam Walker Agent Program has been reinstituted and is the main method by which her products are distributed today. On September 24, 2011, Madam C.J. Walker Enterprises sponsored a centennial celebratory walk called Tracing the Footsteps of a Legacy. This event marked the 100th year since the pivotal point in her entrepreneurial legacy when Madam Walker incorporated her manufacturing company, the Madam C.J. Walker business family, which includes the Madam Walker agents, will continue to keep Madam Walker's spirit alive and well by ensuring that her labor of love, her manufacturing business, continues operating according to the entrepreneurial blueprint she left behind and which is detailed in the historical documents of the company. Thank you. Thank you, Sarah Breedlove. You are indeed one in a million.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to ruggedevo.com. That's ruggedevo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show with Terry Hines. Stay tuned.
Surround yourself with people whose eyes light up when they see you coming. two, slowly is the fastest way to get to where you want to be. And three, the top of one mountain is the bottom of the next, so keep climbing.
When I created Karatee several years back, I was looking to do something for something big in the way of hair loss. As host of the show and all these other amazing things and being in and around the hair and beauty folks for so long and listening to the cries, the deafening cries of our amazing fans who suffer with hair loss, and it affects so many people. We're talking high numbers here who struggle with hair loss and the medical term alopecia. And so I wanted to address this product line in something that I felt could make a difference and literally give them a fighting chance to have another opportunity at growing their hair back. And I have to say, what I was able to work with folks who understood my idea for a scientific approach, along with some amazing all-natural ingredients. And when it comes to product lines, everything is about having, you know, what goes in that bottle be the best that it can be. And then also coupling it with an amazing name and branding. And that's what we did with Karatee. And after rigorous testing and all of that, it was ready to make its debut. And I'm so proud. Our amazing hair shampoo and conditioner was released with amazing results to folks who have, it's made its way all the way over to Africa. I'm so proud of that. We've had distributors all over the country. We have orders that are placed to, you know, folks who carry our products at their hair salons and barbershops. And what I love about Karatee is that it's used for men and women equally. And so it's good for the whole family. And it's all about stimulation of the scalp, and Karatee specializes in that. And that's what I'm so happy about. Now, it took some work to get it off the ground. So I don't want folks thinking that it's so easy to develop products. It is not. It is work. And you need a plan and an effective product. And so otherwise you can be in big trouble. So I'm so very happy that we have Karatee. And we will always have Karatee. It is 100%, it's amazing, and I love it, and this is just the beginning for Karatee. So the shampoo, conditioner, and our amazing beard oil that does so much for the guys. So, you know, this is something that is fantastic. The barbershops carry our Karatee beard oil. In their shops, we have all kinds of wholesale, you know, opportunities. You could even be a distributor for the beard oil. You could be a distributor for the shampoo and conditioner. We also have a complete line that is also being released as well, and so many other things. And I just want to say thank you to the many customers and fans of our Karatee products. And we thank you. And if you would like to order Karatee, certainly you can reach us, as you know, on the internet through our social media. Or you can simply go to our website at hairadio.com and contact us, or just give us a call. at our amazing brand new customer service number, which is 833-402-8882. Again, that's 833-402-8882. It's a toll-free number. And so I thank you for supporting my brand. And by the way, it's Carapy, as in carry and therapy. Thank you.
I'm Maggie Anderson. I am the creator of the Empowerment Experiment and the author of Our Black Year, my family's year-long stand completely living off of Black-owned businesses. When we decided to take on this public pledge, we had no idea how hard it would be. There was only one Black-owned grocery store in all of Illinois, and that grocery store closed 5 months before we finished our year. And I have two little girls. There means no fresh milk, no fresh meats, no fresh produce. But I put them through that because we took the stand and we wanted really to do something extreme out of love for our community, to expose how few Black businesses there still are, to refute negative stereotypes about Black-owned businesses, and to expose economic injustice that still persists in America. After the year, I decided that I could not go back to corporate. I could not go back to law. I've made this issue of economic racism and really trying to create economic empowerment in our Black community my life. The Black hair care firms, they sustained the civil rights movement. Black women created these companies, huge, thriving companies, and we needed that. We talk about Black Wall Street now because we shine a light on what happened in Tulsa. Most Black neighborhoods were anchored by these Black Wall Streets. And if we could bring that back, America would be better. I'm not saying bring all of it back. That would probably be impossible. But we can bring Black hair care back. There are great Black hair care companies that exist, Black-owned hair care companies that exist right now. And it would be wonderful for, in America, just like other groups own their culturally relevant products and industries, that the Black community can own the biggest Black hair care brands, that the Black community can own Black beauty supply stores. 3% of the beauty supply stores in Black neighborhoods, and Black people know what I'm talking about. If you go into a Black neighborhood, you're going to see a beauty supply store, and they're going to sell all the Black hair care products that only Black people use, and they are not owned by Black people. So I've issued the Black-owned hair care challenge, just asking everyday folks to say, "Hi, my name is Maggie Anderson, and I accept the Black-owned hair care challenge," and tell the world that from now on, if I'm going to buy Black hair care products, I'm going to make sure it's from a Black-owned company.
All right. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, I have a very, very special guest joining us right now. You guys already know him. He's one of our daily co-hosts right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show, but he also has gained a great deal of prominence as the host and one of the creators of the Vet Talk Radio Show. He is the man in front of the mic and behind the scenes. We're talking about the king of claims, the one and only Mr. Michael Hopkins. Good morning again, Michael.
Good morning, Carrie Hines. Good morning from... Oh, yeah, and all our fans, family,
exactly.
Beautiful downtown Spotsylvania. Oh,
yeah. We want to welcome everybody, as always. Michael, speaking of which, you have your fan base is amazing. The fans of the Vet Talk Radio Show have gotten to know you very, very well. And we're going to kind of peel back a layer or two and talk a little bit about your success about your success on both the Vet Talk Radio Show and doing double duty right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show as well. So first, let's kind of dive on in. I think it would be nice to either introduce the real Michael Hopkins to the folks out there, and or also give them some insight into what they, you know, some things that they may not have learned about you. So
sound like a plan to me, Karen.
Yeah, I think that would be really nice. So first, I want to kind of jump on in. Now, you are, even though we say Pennsylvania, Virginia every show and every time we talk, pretty much you're on the show, but you're actually from the city of brotherly love. So
you were
born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And,
true.
Yeah, what would you like us to know about your early years and time in Philadelphia?
Well, you know, Karen, I mean, it was a great time in my life growing up back in Philly. And, you know, even though we lived in a city, but we had so much love, you know, for the neighbors, and it was just an era and a time where you knew your neighbors. You know, I knew just about all my neighbors on the block as a little kid, and I had friends of mine, and the thing about it now, that's been so many years ago, I still communicate with a lot of the guys I grew up with way back when. And it's such a good feeling because, you know, a lot of people don't have that nowadays. But back in Philly, you know, the cheese steaks, we used to have block parties, and just the fun of growing up, being a kid back in the time when I was a kid, man, it was just fun, and I enjoyed it. And I miss it sometimes, that era. And a lot of the kids I grew up with, we talk about stuff like that. One of my buddies of mine, we believe it's kind of ironic, but him and I used to play with like the G.I. Joes, the action figures back then. And ironically, I went in the Army.
That might have had some influence on you.
Yeah, so true. I think it had a lot of influence on me.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, Carrie, I just got another kind of funny thing. I was on looking at on eBay, and I just happened to go on there. And when I was growing up, way back when, I used to have the little Tonka toys, little Tonka trucks and dump trucks and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, as you get older, you outgrow that stuff and married, kids, you do all that. Now that I'm older, all of a sudden, I got this bright idea that I wanted to start collecting those toys. And I started doing that, and I have so many of those things. I had to put them in storage. I have so many of them. I literally had to get a storage bin.
You had to get a storage bin. So I know Mrs. Michael Hopkins has a lot to say about that.
It kind of started out one thing, Carrie, but my wife kind of drew a line when all the stuff in our bedroom was getting ready to fall on top of her. She kind of said, you know what, it's either you do something with these things or I'm going to do something with these toys.
and her thing, you might not see them again. I hear you. Well, listen, I want to kind of jump on in because, you know, these early beginnings help to kind of shape, you know, the process, the mindset that would serve you well, literally, as a man in the Army. So before we get there, a little bit more on Philadelphia, and I'm from Philadelphia. I'm raising my hand. I'm also a Philadelphian, from not too far from Michael, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, that's quite true.
And family. Yeah, What, and I agree with you. The folks, we stay in touch, and I do want to say thanks to social media, which has enabled that process. It's made it a little easier to do so. You know, being from the big city, now you're in a part of Virginia that's the northern part. It's not such a big city like Philadelphia. How did you adjust to that area? Was it a big adjustment? Did you have to make a big adjustment with the family? How was that?
Well, Carrie, just being in this area, it's a slower pace. And yes, we had to make some adjustment. You come from a large city, and then, you know, for a time we lived in Maryland for a long time, but we lived, even though we lived in Maryland, we still had ties to D.C. because we worked in D.C., my wife and I, and we traveled to D.C. So D.C., you know, to me, it's sort of like Philadelphia. It's the big city, and you're used to the sound, the noise, the smells, the subway, bus. You're used to all that stuff if you live in a big city. Well, when we moved down here, Carrie, there are no subways. There's no big hustle and bustle. Yeah, it's traffic because, you know, the population is growing, but it's still kind of rural. You know, perfect example, one of my neighbors has chickens in their yard. A rooster and chickens. And I hear the rooster at 6 in the morning. Mm. And I had that's something that, you know, it's kind of mind-boggling when you think about it. I'm a city boy, just like you. The only chickens we saw was at the market. You know, that was it.
I didn't see live chickens.
yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's the only chickens we knew about. But down here, I live in such a rural area. If I go a little bit further from where I live, I'll see cows, literally. I could go 5 minutes away from my house, and there's a farm, you know, right in the middle of Spotsylvania. There's a farm, and it's a transition, but to me, Carrie, it's such a good transition. I'm pretty much retired as far as things go. I'm still active in a lot of things, but I'm pretty much from the hustle and bustle of life. I'm retired from that. And it feels good. I enjoy spending time with my wife now. And I tell her that every day. I said, I love spending this time with you. Because
Well, Michael, remind everybody, what's your wife's first name? And also, can you tell us a little bit about your family? So you have how many children?
Four.
Oh. Wow.
Wow, yes, and my wife, Vinna, that's her name, V-I-N-N-A, and actually...
Vinna, very nice, beautiful name.
It's a very nice, unusual name, and actually, she has ties to Barbados.
Really?
Part of her family is actually in Barbados.
Wow.
And there's one other person that I know of that's from Barbados. That's
well,
a very
the only
famous
one I know
person.
Of is Rihanna.
There it is right there. You got it, Carrie.
That's
who I was going to say, Rihanna. Yep.
ESP, Michael Hopkins.
Yes, you do. You are the man.
Listen, I just want to remind everybody, folks, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to the All New Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, I have a very special guest that you have already been introduced to. His name is Michael Hopkins, and he is the host of the Vet Talk Radio Show. But Michael does double duty. He's also one of our co-hosts right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. And we are so excited to be able to take a little bit extra time with Michael today to talk about his dual roles on the broadcast and also a little bit behind the scenes. What is it like to be in the middle of this new season on the broadcast? Also, the experience of shifting from working with several others when the show launched to a brand new edition of the show now.
some of his favorite episodes and what's next. And also, we've got a few surprises along the way. So this is a very, very special today on our broadcast. And it's an honor and it's a pleasure, really. You bring it each day. I have one of my favorite moments with Michael Hopkins on the Vet Talk Radio, of the Vet Talk Radio Show, but he was on, I think you were on the Hair Radio Morning Show one day. And this, we've lost so many rappers in recent times. And I remember there was one rap artist who had passed away in his time and since, you know, that you were on the show. And Michael, you kind of surprised all of us. We just didn't expect, because we're not exactly, you or myself, we're not in the targeted demographic for rap music, per se, of this era.
Pretty much.
And, and so here it is. Michael came in. You were ready. You were more informed than any of us on the panel. And it opened up my eyes that there's a lot more to Michael Hopkins than meets the eye. You tell Michael something that he can't do, and Michael's going to show you that he can. And that is something I learned myself. And so, Michael Hopkins, you have more than earned your rightful place as one of the top members on this network and to your legions of fans that is just growing every day, because of your expertise and the wonderful things that you share, the heart that you share on this broadcast every day. And so it is
an honor,
a great privilege to talk to you today. What does it feel like to hear all that?
It's such an honor, Carrie, and it's humbling to me, because when we started last season with VTR, Vet Talk Radio, and it was just, I approached you with what I thought may be a good idea for veterans. And you kind of threw me back and you said, you know, that really sounds like a great idea. And we didn't have a name. And I remember this like it was yesterday. And you and I were on the phone talking, and we were coming up with this name, that thing. And I think I said something to this, like, well, maybe we should just call it Vet Talk Radio.
Wow.
And it was like, boom. You said, great. I like that idea. And the thing of it is, about the whole show and about what we did in the first season, myself and we had the Angels, Katrina, Nurjahan, and Nicole, we just thought this was going to be just a little short little thing we're going to do, say a little something about the veterans, and that was it. But what we didn't realize is that we were under the wing of Carrie Hines. And when you're under the wing of Carrie Hines, Carrie Hines is going to make things happen, and he's going to educate you in the broadcasting world. And that's what you've done for me, Carrie Hines, for all of us. That's what you've done. That's what you did. That's what you continue to do. It's an education process that I love so much, because I'm always, every day on the show, I'm always learning something from you. I'm always in the teacher-student mode. I'm always listening intently and intensely to what you say. And you show us, maybe you should do it this way instead of that way. Or maybe if we do this episode on Vet Talk and we add this and this to it, it'll come out a lot different. And I can say one thing about you, Carrie Hines. You've never led us astray. You never told me anything that's not going to work. You've always done that. And that's why this second season, it just started out with a bang.
It has, and we're going to definitely talk more about the second season. But I want to go back to that transition that we spoke a little bit about earlier. And how has it been to work? Because you're now working with one of the original producers, Nicole Marie, who started out as one of the angels, as part of Michael's Angel panel. And to work with now in a totally different capacity and being introduced to the hair and beauty side, and that was the last thing I had imagined when Michael came knocking at our door. So to see this, and first of all, even before I get to know what your experience working with Nicole Marie's been like in this capacity, Michael Hopkins, what has it been like in just being introduced to this wonderful world about hair and beauty and community that we put together every day?
Oh, it's fantastic, Carrie, because this is a world that's new to me. I mean, of course, I have three daughters, Michelle, Simone, and Tariq. Those are my three daughters. Those are my three babies.
Awesome.
And I love all three of them. So I have a son, Michael Jr., but having daughters and a wife, you know, a lot of times me as a guy is kind of, well, you know, they're doing all this hair stuff and all that. I really don't want to know about it. But as time went on, you sort of, you hear the stuff, you kind of remember different things. But when I came to the Hair Radio morning show with Carrie Hines, I got an education in the hair industry, the beauty industry. I continue to get an education and it's been fantastic. I mean, I have learned things and you know, starting to understand things that for years and years, my time as men, not speaking for all men, I mean myself, I really didn't want to, okay, that's nice. But now...
Well, you might have been under that mindset, and that's understandable.
Yeah.
There are social norms that, you know, that only women were interested in hair and beauty. And this is something that is very... different that we have kind of opened up the lid on and explained that, you know, and let me just go back it up a little bit. First, thank you so much for that, Michael. The Hair Radio Morning Show, you know, hair is what we call the proxy. Yes, the show is about hair and beauty, and that is our underlying theme. And I created the Traction Alopecia Foundation cast. That's all about educating everybody about traction alopecia, and we'll talk a little bit about that down the road. But the show itself, hair is what we talk about, hair and beauty, but we use that as an opportunity since that seems to be, and it's not just what women and that women are associated with hair. We as guys are also associated with hair. We have barbers on the show. We tend to have conversations in the barbershops just as much as the our counterparts, the women, are having over at the hair salons. So hair is always where we have gathered, whether it's at the barbershop or the salon, to bring together our community to, you know, to share things that are on our minds and all the above. Our broadcast just takes that to a new level each day. That's all. So where you might have come in with preconceived ideas of what you thought hair represented, and in your mind it might have been just as something that women were all about, not realizing that men are just as passionate in our own way about hair, and that is a big part of our overall being as well. So it's something that we can relate to. We have just as many folks out there who are guys, who are barbers and hairstylists as women. So we're excited about that. And I'm glad that you could find something in it that you could bring that real part of yourself to each day. And you do. You do a great job on the show. So how has this been received by your family members? So you mentioned them. So what do they think of you being on the show and being in all of this at this point? Because I guess this wasn't expected of you to be getting into radio. So what does family think about you being a radio star now?
Oh, you know, Carrie, they love it. They actually love it. You know, they're so used to me being dad, and I always have something going, I never sit down for long periods of time. And my girls and my son and my wife, they know this. And they're not used to me sitting in one place, not doing something. They're just not used to that. And, you know, at first when I retired, everything was okay. But after a while, you get that burning desire to do something, and I have to act on it. And they just love it. They just love it. You know, getting the chance to listen in to their dad, and they're so proud that dad is doing something to help veterans. That's the number one thing they're so proud of, that their dad helping other veterans.
And you are helping veterans. We're going to talk about that, because that's really the crux of why you are here and why you're so successful. And that's why you and how you got on the radar of us over at our show. But, Michael, I want to still go back. We still got some uncharted territory here for us to uncover.
Oh, yeah.
Then we're going to get into some great vet talk, of course. But first I want to ask you, I think I want to go back to, when Nicole Marie, you guys know Nicole Marie, she's my incredible co-host, we call the new queen of the morning, because she so adroitly handles her duties on our broadcast. Now, she left from, not at left so much, but she's still a part of the Vet Talk. We are all one big family. So she kind of moved over to the Hair Radio Morning Show. It is my job to ask you, what has that been like for you? And, you had to get used to her in a different capacity. And also, how has she been to work with? And it's just us, so we're not going to tell. She'll never hear this. So what do you want to say about that?
She'll never know, Karen. She'll never know.
She'll never hear it. Yeah. So what have you got to say about working with the queen of the morning, Nicole Marie, each day? What is it?
You know, Karen, it's just been, like, super fantastic working with Nicole Marie. And, I've been knowing Nicole Marie a little over a year. Matter of fact, close to 2 years.
So it's been a while.
Yeah. And we were doing some other thing, businesses and so forth. So I knew her in that capacity. But to know her and work with her as a host on the show, it has just been a pleasure. Because she just has such a wealth of knowledge. And the things I love about her, you know, she's a mother, she's a wife, her husband's a veteran, and the city council, the educator, she has so many of those qualities that I know when her and I, when we're behind the scenes and we have conversations, I mean, her and I, we can have conversations just about anything. And her knowledge base is just so – I always joke with Nicole Marie, and I say, you know, every time I come to you, I have to come correct. I can't half-step with you because, you know, you're going to question me about just about anything. But, you know, it's all in love, and it's all a deep appreciation of Nicole Marie. And I've been that way ever since I met her from day one. I've always appreciated her.
Yes, and I want to say I think the show is just awesome and has just come a long way. I also want to shout out our entire team and our entire staff. We appreciate you. Now, Michael, I want to turn to the Vet Talk show itself. You mentioned about now currently being in a new season, but I want to go back to the overall message. Today might be the first time someone is actually hearing about the Vet Talk radio show. What would you like them to know that they don't already know about the Vet Talk Radio Show.
What I'd like everybody to know and understand about the Vet Talk Radio Show is this. We are educating not only veterans that serve this great country of ours, we're also educating their families, spouses, friends, and people who they're not even veterans, but they might know a veteran, or this might be something that they were curious about how does this veteran thing work? And basically what we do, we pull back the layers. We educate people on the claims and compensation process and just talking about what is a veteran, how do veterans think. Because a lot of times, Kerry Hines, a lot of people see veterans, but they see veterans in a negative light. And they think a lot of the veterans, that, you know, they've been through a war or they've been through something, and this is the way that they see veterans. But we're not all like that. We're just like everybody else. It's just that we chose a different path, and we served this country. And a lot of times we went in to the military one way, as I called it, and we came out another way. And a lot of my military brothers and sisters, they just need help and guidance. The number one thing they need is for somebody and somebody to listen when they talk. Because a lot of times that's what's missing in our lives as veterans. We don't have anybody to talk to about our experiences as a veteran. We just don't. And we a lot of times when we don't have that, we internalize a lot of stuff. And then it may lead to other things, to like self-medicating and alcoholism, a lot of mental health. But the thing I love about our show, Kerry Hines, with the Vet Talk Radio Show, is we listen. We talk to veterans, and we listen to veterans. That's what I love about, and that's what I want everybody to understand. That's what it's all about here at the Vet Talk Radio Show, here on the radio show here, here on the Hair Radio Network.
Awesome. Well, Michael, let's go back as well. You know, still on season one, the very first season, I should say. What has that whole, you know, season, if you could characterize it, and just a word or two, or even a short sentence, what would you say this, the first outing, what it meant to you guys? What was it? Is it a way that you can characterize it in a sentence or two and kind of just wrap it up for us and tell us what that experience was like in getting it off the ground, getting it launched, the fan feedback, and any favorite episodes that jumped out?
Right. You know, season one, Kerry, it was an education in the world of broadcasting. And we had never been in the world of broadcasting. And here comes Kerry Hines, and you gave us an education, and you continue to give us an education in the world of broadcasting, how to produce a show, you know, how to make it sound great. And that's what you've done for us in that first season. We went from not understanding any of this stuff to becoming experts at it, thanks to Kerry Hines. And
wow.
You know, that's just like, wow.
Yeah. I was just thinking back to those early shows and trying to get everybody on one page and the thoughts and what we were doing and how to, you know, talk on the mic and what to say and when to say and how to say. It's not easy, and it was a lot for all of us to learn to work together. Then at the same time, you're getting to know each other's personalities, and you have incredible fans who are very, very serious about tuning in and supporting all that you're doing on your broadcast. And we had to find a way to honor them each show. We really did. We always make a great point to salute the veterans, to recognize their incredible
contribution to this country. And whether or not we are veterans, I am not a veteran, but I've grown so close to making certain that these veterans are you know, appreciated for their efforts. And that's something that's going to continue throughout everything that we do at my company, at Air Radio, and of course, at the Vet Talk Radio Show. And so I'm very proud to have made this connection as a producer, as a friend, and you know, and I hope that we continue to be that voice for the veterans, that you, Michael Hopkins, continue to be the king of claims and cheering on these folks who deserve it so very much. And you yourself are a veteran. And so let's talk a little bit about that experience, Michael Hopkins, because it's something that we want to share. So talk a little bit. We know that you're the host of the Vet Talk Radio Show, you know, and what was your experience like? Has this been something that, because you've developed a great passion for it, did that emanate out of you being a vet and knowing what you went through yourself? How has it helped on the show? Does it not help?
Oh, it's helped. It's helped a whole lot, Carrie. Back when I first started doing my claims for compensation, and I started seeing the frustration with a lot of veterans with the whole claims and compensation process, and it was frustrating to me also.
Well, tell us little bit more. Explain that, Michael. So what was frustrating about it?
Right. Well, you know, a lot of times what the frustrating part about this is, as a veteran, you served your country, you got hurt or injured, or you got developed an illness while on active duty, you're now out of the military. You may have been out 5, 10, 20, 30, 40 years or so. And all of a sudden, you file for compensation for something that you know happened to you, and you get turned down. They actually tell you, yeah, we know you got it, but it didn't happen when you were in the military. And you're thinking, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me. This happened when I was in the military. I lost my hearing. I have ringing in the ears. I have PTSD. I have these things. That's how a lot of veterans, you know, what they have these issues. And that's the frustrating part. It's almost like you got to go through all these hoops and all these other medical exams, this thing, that thing, this. And then you have a person that's, in essence, determining your fate. And maybe that person never been in the military, or they don't understand the jargon you're saying, and then you don't get the help that you would expect from the VA to really explain a lot of this stuff to you. It's great. I can go to the VA, and I can get this big, thick manual that's got 180 pages. But like I'm like most vets. All I need to know is, what do I have to do in order to get rated? It's got to be something simple for me to do. And that's what brought me to want to do the Vet Talk Radio Show.
Well,
Yes.
Well, Michael, and getting rated. Explain that process because you're talking to fans who of the broadcast of the Hair Radio Morning Show who may have never – you know, who may not be a veteran or may not even know a veteran for that much. Can you explain that the getting rated process and what that's about?
With the rating part. Okay. Basically, it works like this in essence, and I'm going to do like a real short version of it. When we go in the military as service members, we go in with our body and mind and so forth. They say it's at 100%. Everything works on you. But when you get out, if you have any kind of issue that happened while you were in, every time you apply for compensation and they give you the rating is like a percentage. It might be 10%, 20%, 30%, 50%, 100%. And it's based upon your body. What did this do to your body? Is it affecting 50% of your body, 10% of your body, or the body part? That's basically what a rating is. And every time you get one, your overall, that overall 100%, it starts to drop. And what happens, say, for example, they rate you for your flat feet, and they say, yes, because your military service, we'll give you 50%, the highest rating you can for flat feet and feet issues, because it happened on active duty. Well, now the VA says, okay, 50% of your body is still good. And then if I was to apply for something else, like knee damage, any other issues, from that 50%, that's where another rating comes in, or another percentage. And it dwells all the way down to the point where they say, yes, you're at 100%. You are called a permanent and totaled disabled veteran. Your body, due to your military service, in our eyes, does not function like it did when you first came in. That's in essence how it works.
Mm. Wow.
And now,
so
Carrie,
what,
can you see where the frustration is with a veteran?
I was about to say. Exactly. So, wow.
Yeah, that's where the frustration is. And that's why a lot of people, you know, they stop. They don't even file. Or they file, they get turned down, they say the heck with it, and they quit. And from then on, you know, it's just an anger towards the VA, the whole VA system.
I want to say that that's where it seems your new season, that seems to be a little bit more thematic this season, this go-round. Seems that you're more focused on recognizing that you know, the behavior of the veterans, maybe they don't feel that they want to file or they want to stop or whatever it is, but you're delving into what is causing that kind of thinking and kind of addressing
right.
that on the show.
Correct.
And
correct,
that is really amazing.
So a lot of
that.
You know, Carrie, what happens, I get feedback from my veteran brothers and sisters. Every time we do a show on Tuesdays, 8:30 Eastern, 7:30 Central, I get feedback. And a lot of the vets, you know, they tune in. We have a really beautiful veteran population and non-veterans and family. I mean, it's beautiful. And I get constant feedback.
Talking about the Vet Talk radio show, yeah. Because remember, here on our broadcast, we, you know, and that's what I kind of wanted to ask you a little bit about too, Michael, because you have to, you're able to bring almost everything that you do on your Vet Talk radio show, you almost lend it right on over to our broadcast. You've literally been able to introduce it to a broader community who is focused on hair and beauty talk, but you've kind of melted right on in or melded right on into the process. So how were you able to do that? Was that your idea? How did that come about?
You know, Gary, that's an excellent question.
Yeah.
One of the things that happened, Gary, and it happened, a lot of it happened in season one. I began to realize that a lot of people that were tuning in to the Hair, the morning show, the Hair Radio morning show, they were veterans.
Uh-huh.
And we would get feedback from the veterans. And it was like an aha moment for me.
Yeah.
And it really was. It was an aha moment. I said, I had no idea that a lot of the people that you had on the show, a lot of your guests, they were just like me. They were veterans. And it made me feel so good just to be on there, to chop it up with them, and to learn from them about what shows that I should be doing research for to put on the air. I mean, it was just, you know, epiphany, I think. Is that what it's called, Carrie Hines, an epiphany?
Yes, an epiphany, yes. And I just love that. And it has been received so well by the fans of the Hair Radio Morning Show. And then Michael, to do double duty, to be able to switch gears and put on a different hat, where you may be one moment talking about the latest trends in hair and beauty, to another moment talking about the current news, to another moment talking about one of the advertisements that's playing, and maybe a song or two. So how does that feel, to be able to share that kind of talk? And then does your Vet Talk radio show fans appreciate that part of Michael Hopkins?
Oh, yes. Yes, they appreciate it, Carrie. Oh, yes. Because I always get feedback. I always get feedback from vets. And it's just been a fantastic ride being a co-host on the show, on the morning show. It's been a fantastic ride. And I'm getting more and more educated, in especially in the hair and beauty field. I'm getting more and more educated. And I know I'm getting more and more educated because sometimes I'm going down the aisle with my wife and I'm in the beauty aisle looking at things and taking notes and taking pictures. And I mean, you have created a monster over here, Carrie Hines. You really have.
Wow.
And I love it. I love it.
Thank you, Michael Hopkins. We appreciate all the efforts that you've made. Now, what can we say? You know, have you thought about, you know, what's next for you? Is there anything you want to accomplish? Or because we have a feeling that you're just getting started. So is there any big project or anything you want to tackle out there that has been weighing on you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That one of the biggest things that I really want to delve into is veterans and mental health. I want to delve into that because there are so many of my veteran brothers and sisters. You know, a day doesn't go by or when I'm in like my veterans meetings that we have veterans in there and they suffer from some shape, form, or fashion of mental health. And it's I guess you would call it sometimes like the elephant in the room.
Right.
A lot of times us as veterans, we're very guarded when it comes to mental health. And we're the first ones to say, oh no, I don't have PTSD. Oh no, I don't, I'm fine. I'm fine. I don't have anxiety or any of the mood, depression. No, I don't have any of that stuff. You got to be kidding me. Somatic symptoms, I got chronic pain. Oh, no. Can't be me. But reality is this. It is you. It's us as veterans. We have all of these things. And that's one of my things I want to tackle here in the second season, so that I can lay some things out, give out some information, and they can contact certain people, you know, the way that they want to contact somebody.
Absolutely. And Michael, I just want this to be the beginning, and not just in this current season, but to continue this as part of your education process throughout the entire series. Because that, what you just raised, is a very, very important part of our survival. And so we appreciate the veterans. We want them to be healthy inside and out. You deserve it. And so, Michael Hopkins, you know, I just want to say thank you again on behalf of all the veterans and the fans of the broadcast. And everyone who listens, whether they're at the Hair Radio Morning Show side, the Vet Talk Radio Show side, the HairRadio.com network, or even our fans over at the Upscale Magazine Radio.com site, we all salute the work of our veterans and everything that they have done. We appreciate you. Michael, we know that you always have a tagline that you have shared with everybody out there. If you know Michael for 10 minutes, you've heard this tagline. Michael, what would you like to say to everybody today? What is your famous tagline?
It's all about the vets, their families, the friends of the vets, and people who are even non-veterans, Carrie Hines.
All right. On that note, I thank you. We'll see you back here for a brand new edition of Michael's wonderful Vet Talk Radio Show soon. So just, again, if you're not a member at our wonderful site, you need to go to hairadio.com, that's hairadio.com, and become a free member. It doesn't cost a dime. And Michael has his own pages there with the Vet Talk Radio category. It's like a group page, kind of like Facebook and other social media, where you can follow Michael. You can read his articles and stories that he continues to put there and so much more. So good stuff, Michael. Great job.
Thank you, Carrie.
All right. Thank you, Michael Hutchins.
Roots Rock Salon. Healthy roots, healthy hair. Our expert stylists will help you shine naturally beautiful. We offer everything from hydrating shampoo, conditioning hair mask, oil steam treatments to lock in the cuticle, and an array of natural styles and programs to promote healthy hair growth using professional products. Book your consultation today online at RootsRockSalon.com. Visit us at 72 Harrison Avenue, West Orange, New Jersey, or call us at 973-957-7800. Did you know that the Hair Radio Show with Carrie Hines is the longest-running radio broadcast on hair and beauty talk in the world? It's a broadcasting hair industry institution. Be a live guest on air and join our long list of amazing celebrities and hair and beauty industry luminaries who've all been on our show. Give our office team a call at 833-402-8882. Again, that's 833-402-8882. Or visit us online at hairradio.com, because you haven't made it until you've made it to Hair Radio.
It's two thumbs up. The Hair Radio Morning Show goes to the movies. It's our brand new Movie Talk radio segment. Listen live. Tune in right here on our broadcast for our unique review of the latest movie. Join us live on the air to chat. It's Movie Talk on the Hair Radio Morning Show. The Let Your Spirit Soar segment on the Hair Radio Morning Show is about getting your day and ours started with positive thoughts, well wishes, great quotes, and amazing affirmations. So if you have one you'd like to share, please send it through our Salon TV Network app, and we'll get it featured on the air. I'm Carrie Hines. You're invited to be part of our new limited radio broadcast series, Talking About Cosby. It's our chance to collectively delve into the life and career and legacy of Bill Cosby, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, we've got great on-air commentators who will be lending their voices to this complex man's story, and we want to hear from you. Our mid-show hour from 7 to 8 a.m. Eastern, 6 to 7 Central, it's your chance to call in and speak live on the air. Go to our Facebook page, The Hair Radio Morning Show, for complete details. All right, you're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and I have to say it, I don't know any better way to say I'm so excited to have our very, very special guest joining us right now. She's a longtime friend and literally family member to the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're talking about the one and only Cheryl Morrow. Cheryl, good morning, and welcome back to the Hair Radio Morning Show.
How are you?
I am doing great. It's good to have you with us, first of all. And so I kind of want to jump right on in. I want to take a moment. We have got to talk about this. It is, first I want to extend our condolences and on behalf of everybody here at the Hair Radio Morning Show on the passing of Dr. Willie Morrow, your dad, an incredible hair industry pioneer. I cannot say anymore because it is just an incredible legacy that I want to talk to you a little bit about and get any feeling or any sentiment that you want to share. We have just been, literally talking about this since it happened. And even before that, we've always taken time to recognize this, the Morrow dynasty, I call it, and its contribution to black hair. So, Cheryl, I thank you so much for taking time to join us. And we got a lot to get into, including some big news right now. So, Cheryl, there you go. So I'm going to let you take it away. I just want to say thank you so much again for taking the time to chat with us.
Well, the hair care, Black Hair Care Radio has been very dear to me and my family, and I just want to thank you guys for all your love and concern. Before we get into, I want to say thank you for all your support, Gary. You've been wonderful.
Oh, well, back at you. And it is a family, and that's what when we go through our tough times and we share and talk it out. And I want to say, because there's so many folks who listen to us, who are part of our whole network and otherwise, who love you, I can't say it enough. I really, and people you don't even know. I know you don't know them. And they just, they speak of Cheryl like they know you so well because they've listened to you time and time again throughout the Hair Radio Morning Show. So I just have to say all of that because they're going to, trust me, they're going to be listening attentively to everything that we have to say, of course, today. So I've got to say now, Cheryl, listen, I want to go back a little bit. Because, and I saw you everywhere, Cheryl. I really did. I was like, oh, I know her. Oh, that's my Cheryl Morrow. I really did, Cheryl. I said, I have literally just fanned out over my dear friend who I have known for so very long. And a lot of the things now, I knew a little bit about Dr. Morrow, of course, but I had no idea all of that. And the news media, what for me, and you may have, you will have your sentiment about it, but I've got to tell you, Cheryl, I felt honestly for the first time that the news media paid adequate tribute. And that's just far as I'm, concerned, because over here in New York, remember, I'm on New York television, so seeing it on local news and having them tell the story of Dr. Morrow. And I watched every single time it came on, whatever they did, as soon as I was there. And I loved it. And I couldn't get enough of it. So I just had to express that to you, if that makes any sense whatsoever to you, hearing this. But I just had to let you know that that's exactly how I felt. I was so proud. So proud. So that's my feeling. Okay, yes. So... there you go.
Now that
you've
got that out of the way.
Yes, okay. Listen, I have to talk to you about some big news now. Okay, and this is really kind of, I've never weighed in publicly like this on the topic, on chemical hair straighteners. I understand all the different aspects and the big spectrum of hair care. So I've always been very careful, so to speak, on expressing viewpoints to a certain degree. I don't mind our guests, of course. They've come on and said everything under the sun. But but when it came to the study that, and I saw the local, speaking of the news, I watched the media very carefully, and I've not where major news outlets and broadcast news and broadcast TV have revealed this whole thing about, this linkage that they are talking about with regards to uterine cancer and the higher risk for Black women and minority women and so forth. So women of color, I should say. So I have to say this to me was huge. And it's not something that we could not pay attention to. You know, we're the Hair Radio Morning Show. We should be the very first to be all over it, literally. Wherever we stand and whatever we believe or not believe, it's my responsibility to talk about it. Otherwise, what we might as well hang it up at the Hair Radio Show. So I just wanted to get everybody's perspective. And, you know, unless you've been under a rock in the last 72 hours or so, at least at this time that we're putting this together, you know, this has been huge. So I want to kind of start there with this huge news that they're showing that there is a potential linkage between, and this is from their research, again, and NIH, the National Institute of Health, and so many folks, and they've done all of this research and have literally said now without a doubt, and I shouldn't say without a doubt, that's my paraphrasing, but they've shown a direct linkage, and they're saying that the Black women are at higher risk. So how do you feel about this, and what would you like to say about our show?
Well, I have gone over back and forth in my mind about what my personal responsibility is as Mr. Morrow's daughter and the one who has been, you know, advantaged because of Black hair care. Mm-hmm. I've had a really great, you know, childhood, and I had a, you know, really young adult life, and Black hair care has afforded me an incredible career and life. And so my responsibility and legacy is to preserve that for other young men and women and entrepreneurs who want to embark in this industry. And so studies like the recent one, via a researcher from the National Institute, you know, of Health.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's especially in the American media machine, it's very important to understand and to interpret what you're hearing. And I am personally taking it as an attack only because the way it's written. And I'm not anti-research, by the way. And one of the things that I'm concerned with, one, it's language. Two, it's inconclusive. Three, and if things are as inconclusive as it is written, then I don't understand the breaking news and the prime time it's giving it, you know, it's getting. And I know that, you know, you have to follow the money in a capitalist society. And so critically, once you take a look at it, it is sometimes you got to look at the timing of things. You got to take a look at what would be the motive. And I know that other politicians also use the same tactic. And so, but this is personal to me because what is, as many may know, that I'm also a cosmetologist and a teacher of professional PhDs in corporate Beauty America, okay? And so, and the founder of Cosmetic Trichology. So it's very important that, to me, that if things that are like that are going to affect economic bottom lines, the professional rank of beauty, the salon world, salon economics, and what the consumer believes to be true, that is very concerning to me. because black hair care is a legacy. It is an industrial juggernaut. It is highly profitable. And so that concerns me. That is my main goal, is to bring black hair care and to make it futuristic. However, to also bring about a new wave of innovation, hair texture enhancement. But what I will not allow is for junk research and fake news to wither away the stronghold that has been created over 100 years ago. And that is what my concern.
Okay. Well, Cheryl, wow. All right. Let's kind of take a closer look at all of this. You know, and I'm going to say, for me, I've heard these, you know, this kind of thing for years, just to be quite frank. I heard about it for a long time, and many of you guys out there have heard the same. You've heard little mummeries and little, you know, people talking in different pockets. But I've never seen how it had ever bubbled up to this degree. Now, going along with what you just said, okay, I hear you 100%. And this has can have a great impact on folks. And we're talking about financially and otherwise. And so I do want to talk a little bit more about that, because that's a very good point. But what about those who are, you know, using chemical straightener products? Some of the hairstylists who are using these things, and how do you feel? So let's kind of break that apart. Now, you said you might, and I'm paraphrasing here, but you might, that this sounds like it's, kind of could be fake news, or kind of, you know, there's much more. I'm thinking that there's much more to it in your words. So what, and what you might feel, so what would you like to, how can we further define this? Mm-hmm. Is it, so you don't feel that this is, or the way that it's being spun, because I did read it carefully as well, and I was a little bit, the way that I saw when they talked about the 3%, and the greater community and stuff. So I had to take a little bit of a leap. I'm going to be honest. And so I get a little bit of what you're saying. I really do, because, I did. I understand. I kind of can feel. I understand how you feel, I believe, on this. So what do you tell folks? Because now folks are calling you. I know this is not your first call from me, Cheryl Morrow. So I know people are asking how to make this make sense to them. Because you have some women who, and this is what they live by. So what do you say?
Well, you have to remember that, let's just go back to about 1982, when my father, Dr. Morrow, Willie Morrow, challenged the State Board of California.
Mm.
And because when you come from a chemical background, that most cosmetology board officials, elected or not, or appointed, they are not coming from a cosmetology perspective. Now, they may have a cosmetology background, but that does not serve as an expert on how chemical treatments interact with skin and hair. It's very important.
Exactly.
And to also understand, once these things are formulated, what is the nature of how they behave on a surface, right?
Yes.
And Dr. Morrow made it made a trip up to Sacramento, California, to have a meeting with them and a group of cosmetologists to correct the misinformation, to correct some of the questions answers on the cosmetology test to get into the curriculum of a more scientific sound perspective on Afro textures, okay, in a real sound logical, chemical logical framework for how chemicals actually act and not through a guesstimation based on how European chemicals work on European straight hair. It's a difference. So in other words, chemical relaxers are alkaline in base, which means that they are on the high end of the pH scale after 6, after 7.
Wow.
And because they have relaxer technology behaving like acid based products such as thiol or permanent waving, okay? Mm-hmm. Mix up those two sciences or chemical actions, you're teaching cosmetologists wrong when it comes to relaxing. And the basis of the cosmetology boards and state boards across the United States, they have not corrected this. And so the basis of how they behave, people are assuming that these things behave like penetrators, like thiol and hair color. Okay, and bleach. And so once you keep getting that those two education principles wrong, well, then it festers, and then everybody thinks that these things behave like that. So when research health professionals in research firms across this country and across the world, they go into their research with already wrong and ignorant premises, and those things must be corrected, okay? Because the FDA has relaxers in a category called depilatories. Those depilatories melt. Depilatories dissolve. They don't penetrate.
Right, they kind of pull out or remove.
So the point is, at that particular juncture, there is a gross and amount in an industry and a policy malfeasance that you have to correct it so you can educate the professionals who are operating and practicing within the industry. But when you don't have that corrected, then researchers are not even starting correct.
I was about to say, where does, because obviously they didn't have anybody like you in the room. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. Because I doubt very seriously that they were probably even, looking at it from this perspective, to be quite honest. And so you're saying starting point was not a good place to start.
Well, here's the other thing. In my many years of experience as serving, clients would hire me to be their expert witness in beauty,
exactly,
and black hair, and chemical litigation.
Yeah.
The key here is when does the consumer's responsibility and the professional responsibility, where is that line of demarcation? When does the professional industry become responsible and then the consumer becomes responsible, especially when the same substance is sold on the commercial market? You don't need a professional to purchase the same formulation, the same substance, the same product. So where does one become responsible for application and then the other consumer doesn't? And so there are some consumer issues and some professional issues. And these things don't get talked about because cosmetologists are not educated. Their scholar is not appropriate or not conducive, shall I say, to defend themselves and to defend their profession and to defend their industry. And so that's why I am taking it, especially when it becomes random attorneys like Benjamin Crump, who is now a lawsuit on behalf of a consumer. See, that's where you start, because the professional and the consumer has the same amount of contact with the same amount of potency, the same chemical, the same treatment, the same cosmetic. And so when you don't have those things talked about and you don't have that kind of information in the industry itself and professionals who are trying to make a living, and the trends of these particular services are still prominent within the salon. So, you know, my goal is to protect that and to protect the legacy of Black hair care ownership and control and influence. But I'm not anti-research enough to say that we don't need to make any of these cosmetic treatments safer. What I am saying is that I don't want random research that I know is based and is from a premise that is false, because it has never been corrected. I think that's what I'm saying.
Wow. Well, listen, you have, it looks like you have definitely set a mouthful there, Cheryl, on this. This is really huge to me. First, let me just respond to this on Benjamin Crump. For you guys who may not be aware, he has, as Cheryl pointed out, filed a lawsuit on behalf of a user, one, as far as I'm aware at this point, just one single user of chemical hair straightening products. And the folks that are listed in what he has stated are huge. You're talking about gigantic conglomerates, okay? Gigantic, literally, like top folks here, and quite a few of them. So my thing, Cheryl, I just wanted to definitely ask you on this, because, and it sounded like you were saying that there might be responsibility on both sides, but, you know, whether it is the manufacturers and or the consumers. And so thing about, go ahead, Cheryl.
Yeah. But you have to consider that beauty, perfume, and cosmetic industry is not heavily regulated because these effects are temporary. That's number one. Two, FDA does have warnings on certain cosmetics, but relaxers are not one of them for that very reason. The effects are temporary. There are some FDA warnings against beauty treatments, but ironically, the FDA warning happens to not ironically go with the research findings that are not linked to cancer or becomes carcinogenic. And why would that be? Why would the FDA not have a warning against them, but then research finds that the ones that they do have a warning for don't have healthcare implications? Now, that's not logical.
No, I don't quite get it.
That is my problem. The FDA has warning against certain hair color dyes, alpha hydroxy, chemical skin peels, and other things that within the beauty industry. But why, when it comes to real research, none of those warnings are included in risk factors, health risk factors? That is, to me, not logical. And that means that there are certain, either two things are happening. You don't want or want to encourage the Y2K natural hair care industry to return to a straight hair or relaxer trend, or you are trying to tell us that all of a sudden you're concerned with Black women's uteruses? What are you trying to, you know, because at the end of the day, I am I'm looking at this critically, and I'm not vilifying them for the research in and of itself. What I am saying is, I know you don't have enough beauty, afro hair, textured intelligence to make any conclusion which you don't anyway, because most of these studies are inconclusive. But I don't like the media it gets in what the implications could be on an economic level in terms of what the influence would be in the economic backlash on hairstylists and cosmetology's bottom line. That's my problem.
Well, first I have to say, this is really huge. And we may not really get the full impact of this, economically speaking, for a while. But I'm worried about short term also. Let's talk about the consumers, and then we'll work it back to the litigation and where everything is on that. But, well, yeah, even that. What should consumers do, in your opinion, Cheryl Morrow? What should chemical treatment customers do right now, if you will?
First of all, they should demand that cosmetology not just teach culturalness, cultural hairstyling. For instance, the focus on protective hairstyles in terms of policy,
right,
to me, is a minor, because if we change the focus to cultural hairstyling falling under the First Amendment, which is cultural expression, then
right,
we are talking about textured hair being protective under the First Amendment in the U.S. Constitution, not telling them that we've created some subgroup that is illogical called a protective hairstyle, and then we want that to have protections within the private sector to where people can't have dress codes if they want to. Well, then that's not the issue. So demanding we have real Afro-textured Afro-cosmetology, then it will be taught correctly, and then we won't have, as I say, real goofy policy based on things that
right,
really are not logical.
It's
then
just getting into the, yeah, but they're just getting into a lot of the training for the cosmetologists and the state boards educating these cosmetology students on Afro-textures. I've just seen with, and it's not even a whole bunch of states yet. So, you know, where it's just being incorporated. And so I'm well, like, oh my goodness, this is just going to throw everything. To me, it's just like you just
it's come to a head, and it's just time to one, have the consumers be educated to the point where they at least know that cosmetology boards are only including Afro textures in what we call a practical manner, which means that as long as we train a European on how to do something, then that's education. No, understanding things work, how chemicals work, the chemistry of black hair care, the chemistry of individuals who have Afro-textured hair, the whole spectrum in terms of science and understanding, and in chemistry and understanding in culture, then the cultural is important. But that is not dealing with textured hair care just because you do it on a social or practical manner, or just learn how to do it. It's not technical. The problems that we are talking about now are chemical, chemistry, and scientific in nature.
Right.
And because we want to separate Afro textures out, they avoid this, and this is things that happen like the studies, the random studies, the junk research, and the fake news, because we won't scientifically deal with it. We just want to say everybody's the same. Oh, here is the standard. And that is coming you know, home to roost, because now we don't have enough intel. But the intel is there. We've just ignored it. And when the African hair movement of the 1960s tried to infiltrate cosmetology, cosmetology said no. Then the black hair, then the black barber industry is the one that embraced it. So therefore, we don't have as many scientific problems within barbering, because barbering dealt with black ingrown hairs in a very scientific way, as we see in the history of the military. They dealt with that. But cosmetology seems to only want to deal with the practical matters of textured hair care, and this is why we have the problems that we have.
Well, I have to say, I'm thinking about this, and let me just go back a little bit because I have a question for you, Cheryl. First, if you guys are just tuning in, let me just catch everybody up. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and today our guest, who is really joining us after quite a while, quite a bit, we're so honored to have Cheryl Morrow. As you guys know, I've always called her hair royalty, and that she is. And has always made a big difference here in coming to the show and putting things in, shaping our perspectives, you know, instead of us just taking, you know, just face value at things, kind of peeling back the layers and giving a real good understanding of a lot of this. And like I said, helping us to make sense of this. Now, so we're talking about the chemical straighteners. We're talking about the impact on throughout everything. Like, to me, this is huge. And if you are starting with, you know, that's just one lawsuit, and I'm sure that folks are doing all kind of, what is that, the class action this, they'll be doing all of that. And I don't know, can these companies survive that, that kind of, you know, picking apart, if you will, because this is ginormous. And folks will be able to maybe, you know, bless you there, but folks will be able to really make the case that this is, you know, something that they've been affected by. So, can these companies survive? Cheryl, let me ask you that question. Will it matter to some of them, because they're so they're so rich?
Well, it's not a matter of if they'll survive. The matter is will the trends survive, that they have a life cycle like all trends do. But for you, for researchers on the outside with their low level of information, are going to stop the natural life cycle of trends. And so companies that are ready to deliver and to fulfill the trend, well, they have been castrated from it because of junk research. And so it's not a matter if the companies can survive. It's a matter of can the trend survive to have a natural life cycle of how generation and trends come back and forth and to and fro. We all go to curly, straight, to wavy, and then back and forth. Weaving, no weaving, braids, no braids, afro, no afro, straight hair, no straight. Of how cosmetic and beauty trends and fashion trends and all of this. So when the fashion trend of not wearing denim, and then everybody's doing something else, and then when it comes back, but now it can't come back because someone said there's something wrong with cotton. And the cotton and those particular studies are inconclusive. But then so you have created a malfunction in the natural trends of how people gravitate to vintage style and retro style, and then things come back. And then, well, why are you doing that to just relaxer? And see, and I understand this very well. I understand that the implications of what is going on in the back end, because at the end of the day, everybody loves money, no more than, I mean, white folks love money than more than anybody. So what would be their motive to do that?
Yeah. That's a good question.
And I have to look at that. And so that is my main concern. I know that it's going to have enormous bottom line implications.
Absolutely.
And so that is one of the things that I am trying to at least not say that research does not have. Research belongs in every industry, the computer industry, telecommunications, the medical, you know, the transportation industry, the tourist industry, the food industry, the music industry. It has a natural a progression. But
yeah,
hair care is not afforded that. That's
true.
Number one.
But so, okay. To play devil's advocate, when you talk mm-hmm. about the NIH, superbly respected outfit, and they're the ones who kind of really put this out there, so it sounds like perhaps it could have been done differently. But let me ask you this. Was it needed to address this at all? Was there a need to address this is my question to you, because I really like to know.
But if it needed to be addressed, it would have been addressed through a regulatory institution, the FDA.
Mm-hmm.
While getting front and center news from these off-centered research institutions is very bizarre to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's just say, for instance, we lived through the last couple of years of a medical pandemic, a health pandemic, okay? And one of the things that on the federal level and state level they were dealing with is to convince African descending people to trust the government in dealing with it in terms of creating prevention such as a vaccine, right? And
right.
So my point is that also dovetails into random concern about me relaxing.
Wow.
And since you have very low, infantile, borderline moronic information and know it, I still
how do you really feel about it, Cheryl?
Yeah, I think it's odd. And I do also realize that the timing, because there's 22 years on the Y2K natural movement.
Right.
And that movement has been led by also the lowest informed generation dealing with black hair care and cosmetology.
Okay.
And so
now,
when you have that generation, because we got three more years in it, 25 mm-hmm. years, a full generation, right?
True.
So we're three more years left in the Y2K generation, a natural hair movement. And because these two now, and when they meet research like this, because I tell people all the time, the Y2K natural hair movement, the difference between the 1960s, their parents, is that one was Afro-motivated. Y2K is chemical-motivated. They're not pro-natural. Mm. If that was the case, it would not be to get a curl pattern that is not native to the texture itself. But that's a whole other subject. But I will what I will say is that when you have these two entities, the junk research and the fake news, and then you have, and it's meeting and joining a generation that has very low knowledge, it is not a good combination as to serve to infrastructure black hair care in terms of our ownership, our influence, and gaining profits and growing it. Those two forces that I just mentioned, they're just not conducive enough. They are not up to standard. They're not up to par and up to task. What they're going to most likely do is just ruin a 100-year progression of competitive markets within black hair care. And that's just very that's concerning to me. And I just don't, as an heiress of a black hair care legacy that has expanded beyond 5 to 10 to 7, 8 families, the Bronners, the Gardners, the Johnsons, you know, the Lusters, and the Cottrells, and all of this rich. I mean, black hair care gave us literally Soul Train.
Okay.
So this is a lot. Black hair care is woven and at the pillar and foundation of the economics of black America as it spans into the international markets. That is my concern.
Wow. Cheryl, I got to ask you this, though. What do you say to folks out there who are looking at this on the natural hair side and saying, see, we told you? What would you say?
And see, that I would say that allows us to understand that you do not know your history.
Mm.
And see, history is not important just because, or it's not about to find out what happened. History is important because it's a connector of what was to what is.
And what will
that's
be.
Important connector because it allows you to not redo something that's already been done, and it allows you to see something that does need to be done or improved or expanded upon, and to go from there, to not start over. The reason why history missed the Y2K, because the Crown Act came out of Y2K.
Oh, yes.
You can hear me.
Yes.
But if they would have known that they did not need to do that, they did not need an additional statutory Crown Act, because the U.S. military had already, the most powerful military the largest employer, the largest industrial complex on the planet, had already given you that particular research. But because we misunderstand history serves as a connector. So the Y2K don't know their parents already did it. And then, of course, the white population don't know their parents also did it. Then everybody starts from zero every time we need to improve something. And that's why history is important. But
wow, Cheryl.
They will say, oh, I told you, but here's the thing.
Exactly.
They will say that, but they will be saying it with no sound logic. And the point is that facts always ends the argument. It's more dependable than opinion. More
Cheryl Morrow, my goodness. Okay. I love that, what you just said. Yes, back
it's
in the
silence.
Argument. Wow.
It silences deceit. So facts will always end the argument. And that is where we're trying to, you know, Afro textures to be scholastically respected, scientifically respected. Mm. And to be included into the national and state programs into their curriculums, so we can stop being dumbified by, you know, we're just practically trading trends. Because if you look at European hair care, European hair styling of the 17th and 18th century, it looks like African hair braiding. We've always did each other's cultures. That's nothing new. What is new is for you as a national and state level to recognize that Afrotextures is a dominant prototype, is genetically different, and that we have to approach it like that. And so that will get rid of it. And if they want to do a study, at least let the study be based on that and scientific aspect of Afrotextures and not just ignorance that it all they're saying. But it's not. Obviously, it's not. Since you wanted to come out and get and say black women are four times, and even that type of kind of statements in a study have not taken into consideration all chemical treatments within the salon. Relaxers are the only ones that stay on 5 to 7 to 10 minutes. All of the other chemical hair treatments stay on for 25 to 45 minutes. So if there is a health risk, time exposure becomes a factor. So why didn't they consider that, yeah, they may get them four, let's just say for all, if since they want to use four times or more a year. Well, at the end of the day, four times even a year does not even equate to 45 minutes of time exposure.
That's true.
And if
now,
you get your hair bleached, your roots bleached, well, that is 30 to 45, that's about 30 minutes, and then you get the hair color, and then you get the toner. So you're exposed to hair color 30 minutes per sitting. So that's four. That's about 3.5 hours compared to under 45 minutes compared to a relaxer. So you're not even taking that into consideration. And then in your study, you went more sinister. You said bleach and hair color and permanent waving.
It's not.
See, that to me is
that was
capital conversation. And see, and to me, that only makes me draw one conclusion, that you're coming after the economics and the bottom line.
You know what, Cheryl, I have to say my eyes opened up on that part of the what was reported by the news as well on that with regards to the dye and the others that, you know, just they made it very clear that everything else was okay.
Well, think about it. If that is their argument, and if that's their premise, well, then what are you saying? The California Curl and the cold wave cream technology that took the hair through two processes. We put the cream cold wave on, straightened the hair, and then reapplied it as we got it on the rods, right? And then we rinsed it and neutralized it again. You know, so what are you saying? Do the 20 years that black people did their own version of permanent waving, you know, oh, that was healthy?
Did you know that the Hair Radio Show with Carrie Hines is the longest running radio broadcast on hair and beauty talk in the world? It's a broadcasting hair industry institution. Be a live guest on air and join our long list of amazing celebrities and hair and beauty industry luminaries who've all been on our show. Give our office team a call at 833-402-8882. Again, that's 833-402-8882. Or visit us online at hairradio.com, because you haven't made it until you've made it to Hair Radio.
But then it's like, you know, I'm kind of wondering, do they know how Carrie Hines fits into this? Because you have been part of a media, I won't say frenzy, you've been part of the media and made some very, very important inroads and, you know, connections that I think that somebody needs to explore and write about or talk about or tell about. So I'm thankful that you're going to help me look back and kind of document some of the things that you have contributed to media and some of the people and lives that you've touched, because I think it's really important, and people don't know because you're so humble. And if you would, just indulge me and share with the listeners some of the things that you do as Kerry Hines.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Kerry Hines.
All right. Thank you, Purple Barbie. It is Wednesday morning, November 9th of 2022. I'm Kerry Hines. It is our show number 783 as we march towards our 1,000th show. It has the live three-hour broadcast that we're talking about from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And real happy to have you guys join us. Listen, it's all about the political aftermath, okay, this morning, and I'm so excited to talk with you about it. We are first bringing to the line one of my amazing colleagues. You guys know him as the host of the Vet Talk Radio Show. You heard from him first thing this morning on an extended new interview. We're talking about Michael Hopkins. Good morning, Michael. And again, welcome.
Good morning. Happy mid-show.
All right. Yes, thank you. Well, now we're in the spotlight hour. It's 8 to 9 a.m. Hour on the Hair Radio Morning Show. We have a very special guest who's just dropping by. We could not do today's show without the incomparable Wayne Smith. You guys know him. He's the former mayor from Irvington, New Jersey, right outside of New York City, and we're just excited to have him. Mayor for 12 years. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of the things that he's getting up, that he's working on these days, and plus I want to talk a little bit about his legacy. But first, we're delving into, as I said, the political aftermath of this incredible election for midterms. Let me just go ahead and bring him on, Wayne Smith. Good morning.
Hey, hi, Carrie. Good morning. And Michael,
hello.
Good morning to you as well.
Good morning.
So there was...
Yeah. We want to... We're excited, Wayne. Go ahead. What
so
would you like
true.
To say, Wayne?
So
yeah.
True.
Yeah, so it's a lot of stuff in the news this morning about the election. But
Woo.
I do want to say that the big prediction that the Republicans would have this big red wave end up turning it to be a little sputter, if you will. And it's, so
Into a little red puddle spot.
Yeah.
And Wayne, tell us why you feel that way and why we're saying that this morning.
Well, I did so because they had this overwhelming expectations that they were going to win by large margins and take back the House by large margins and take back the Senate. And then they were planning the demise of Joe Biden as a result of that. So what it looks like to me, the American public is pretty much evenly divided about the electoral process. So we have some elections to wait for the outcome of, particularly in Georgia. It looks like they're headed to a runoff in December. And so what's important for those kinds of elections, particularly in Georgia, where Stacey Abrams went down in defeat and Reverend Warnock was able to hold on. Looks like he has a slight lead going into the runoff. I think it's critically important that the voters of Georgia, particularly the African-American community, and again to the Hair Radio audience and constituents, they can have a major role to play. People get burnout from all this electoral stuff and political stuff. And so they have a tendency when they have these runoff elections not to come back out. But Senator Warnock needs folks to be super engaged because we hope that he remains in the Senate, and that's going to play a major role in terms of the policy questions we have. So don't be depressed about Stacey Abrams, but look forward to how we save Senator Warnock and going forward. There were some other surprises, right there in the state of New York. Kathy Holcomb was able to, looks like she has about a 5% margin of victory.
Yeah.
That was surprising. She held on, but it was, Zelkin, when I looked at the ads, You know, there's definitely some issues around crime in New York City and around
well,
New York State.
I'm going to delve into all of that, Wayne. Now, I'm going to let you please finish out your thought because I'm going to jump right in there on all of those things that you have raised.
I think you know that had an impact on the election. They promoted that aggressively. So, but she was able to hold on. And remember, you know, this is an interesting thing. Holcomb was the lieutenant governor for Andrew Cuomo, who went down in flames,
right.
Who went very powerful governor. So, you know, there's a
and he'll be
a,
back.
A back.
That's my prediction.
That's
he'll
your prediction.
Be back.
Well, he's trying. He's doing a podcast, so he's trying to get media attention going as well.
Yeah,
he started a podcast. He still has plenty of money available, so anything is possible in American politics. Just I my prediction is I doubt it. But so
if
Holcomb
Trump
held on.
Can come
back,
anybody can. The devil himself can come back. So
it's possible. I'm not saying it's possible. I view it as highly unlikely. I just don't think it's likely. But so Holcomb was able to hold on. Your Attorney General Letitia James got reelected, which means Donald Trump's still going to have that big civil suit for millions of dollars around his neck. Because she got reelected, and the other interesting thing is, New York has been its legal system has been at Trump and making some tremendous promise for him, and that's going to continue because Zeldin promised that he was going to remove the Manhattan District Attorney, which also has an active case to Trump and the Trump organization. So,
you know,
the politics continues.
Well, first of all, let me just catch everybody up. Wayne, it's great to have you. If you guys out there, mm-hmm. you're just tuning in to the All New Hair Radio Morning Show, I'm Carrie Hines with Michael Hopkins from Vet Talk Radio Show, kind of joining us here this morning. And my very, very special guest is Wayne Smith. Wayne, I have to say, you are our favorite political analyst here on the show,
well,
a contributor to our broadcast. And we are just excited to have you here. We know that you're in the private sector, in the business world out there these days, but you keep your nose to the grindstone and you know what's going on out there in the world, and we so appreciate it. You have helped to educate and inform our audience and our incredible fans from all over the world about what's happening locally as well as nationally. Listen, I have to address some of those things that you mentioned. First of all, let's take it from the top. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Here's the thing about this so-called red wave, which to mm-hmm. me, I've watched New York media. I watched closely.
Mm-hmm.
I really
mm-hmm.
did. And I remember how it all kind of, because I see how this pattern that they have. Okay,
mm-hmm.
in local media and national media too. But here's what they did. And then they have, and it's all kind of feeding into each other. There's a whole thing about the local media, in my opinion, trying to, they started back months and months ago setting up a narrative about crime being out of control. This
mm-hmm.
was the narrative. Now, and it all kind of – it's a big old thing out there. And I hate to sound theory-ish, but this is what I believe has transpired. They started with this whole media wave. And here, first of all, you got to look at what they – to me, these parties set up the talking point. It's almost like everybody sat in a room. The Democrats and the Republicans, and this is what I imagine. Okay, the Republicans, well, we'll take the talking points on crime. And the
mm-hmm.
Democrats, we'll take the talking points on abortion. Okay, everybody, and they go to their corners, and this is what they do. Now, here's the thing. There is no political monolith to me. There isn't. I don't think so. And the narrative that local media played in this is abominable. Let's not even go to
mm-hmm.
the crime thing. I'm not even going to get mm-hmm. to really go into this perceived crime that's just run rampant out in New York. If you, even if you look at the New York numbers, we have, what, between 12 and 15 million people here. If you look at what's going on, and you do the math, even if, God forbid, and any crime of any sort or violence or anything is awful, but if you really do the math, I think it's a whole lot safer than you think here. So, you know, by painting this nonstop narrative on television and leading in with their, you know, fancy, you know, music and just trying to, it's more about fear-based promotion. Fear-based reporting is what it's called. And that's all that they do locally to drive up viewership.
Well, yeah,
that's all that they do.
I agree with you. And remember,
that's
you're a media
one.
Guy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's awful. And then number two, I watched how all this rolled out. First, they talked. Kathy Hochul has a huge lead. Kathy Hochul, big, big lead. That's all you saw. Then, then of course, all this millions of dollars poured into this campaign and the her competitors. Then you saw, and the reason was you saw the news media was using one poll or particularly one poll for analysis. Then they started using another poll that favored, that was Republican-backed votes. And that one, of course, showed a different outcome for Hochul. And what you got was nothing short of then the news media trying to create some kind of discourse or built around that the race was tightening. Race wasn't tightening nowhere in the man in the moon. No tightening.
Well, you know.
And the media, you know, tried to paint it that way to scare up people to build the biggest, to build stories and kind of this so-called news built around this kind of thing that it didn't even really exist.
Yeah, well, you
and
know,
it's
so
awful.
Yeah, so listen, you know, as a media, so listen, you know, as a media person, the first ethos, not even covering politics, but just media in general, if it bleeds, it leads. So any salacious, violent dynamic is always going to catch the attention of the media. So in this context, crime was the story that if it bleeds, it leads. So they led with that. What was happening was, you know, crime, whether it was in the subways or some craziness going on as a result of the pandemic, all of that got acerbated by the economic issues. And so anytime
right.
there's an economic challenge, people, you know, look at all the issues that, you know, kind of hurt the economy. And crime is always a challenge, particularly in urban environments. You got people, you have poverty, you have people with you who don't have opportunities, you have people who will have fallen victim to whatever the whether it's drug addiction or alcoholism or just plain poverty and can't have no other way to survive. So those are issues as a society we've got to figure out to address. And so we go from one pendulum to another. So I remember, you know, maybe a decade or more, you know, the crime was the number one issue. I mean, what's the name? George Bush. I mean, that's more than a decade, but the first President Bush actually did
oh,
a really
wow.
important thing. You remember he talked about
yeah.
Willie Horton and Michael Dukakis, and so he used the crime and fear issue.
Right.
You know, and there was also
right.
the issue of race involved with that as well. So that is an old political tactic. You know, people are
yeah.
the first role of government is always public safety. How do we secure our people? And then how do we create an environment for people to grow and thrive economically? But the first
See,
thing
I look
is,
at crime very different
mm-hmm.
than when it comes to television and reporting and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
You are really not so much talking about crime, but what you're talking about is fear. And you know, and I know that when it's, as you mentioned, when it's exacerbated on television, what fear turns into it's just racist. It's from a racist
It's very nuanced.
Had the nerve to give false equivalencies. Here's the problem with what they did in the local media, and this is the God's honest truth. They took Kathy Hochul, who was leading the entire race, the entire time, and then tried to say, then the discourse and what they started promoting, oh, the race is tightening. Well, of course it makes it more exciting for local news to get viewers to say that it's tightening and there's a real fight. And giving a false equivalency, it was never close.
No, but here's the deal. Holcomb held on. She won. The last numbers I saw on this morning was about 5%.
I think it's a little higher than that.
But she, you know, it was she had a double digit lead. So because of race tightens, you know, because of the advertising, the money spent, and then there was some swing.
Yeah, the negative promotion from that. Listen, now here's what I do say is that none of these races should even have come close. None. So I'm not going to get on this, the Republican speaking points about the Democrats' messaging, failure to message and this and that. What there is a failure, in my opinion, is that it's not all just, you know, out and out chaos, you know, just wants and behavior, such as what the Republicans, the extreme Republicans have demonstrated. They don't care.
Yeah,
there are no boundaries
in
what they do.
You know, here's one of the things I think that the Democrat, and I'm a Democrat, could have done better. And one of the reasons why they didn't do it, because they thought it was a downside to doing it. During the pandemic, a lot of people were helped. And because they were poor, the poverty rates changed during the pandemic. People got tremendous resources during that period. Some lifted some people out of poverty. They had never seen that kind of money before. The failure, I think, in the Democratic Party is when we do those kinds of social upliftment, we got to go in those neighborhoods and register people to vote and tell
right.
that
and
story.
And turn them into actually right to show the correlation.
And because it's income and race, where they don't think the people will be likely voters, they don't make the investments in those neighborhoods that they could for a return on the vote. So like in North Carolina, Sherry Beasley could have won that race, but in certain districts they didn't do the ground game. You got to get people out talking to people.
You got
it. Now during the pandemic,
boots on the ground.
But you got to put resources in there to make that happen. And when we're kind of afraid because of the neighborhoods, we don't make those kind of investments. And we think so. What happens is people get media blind. You hear so many commercials, you stop listening. You know, so your TV's on, you kind of block it out.
They sent me so many pieces of mail. I even got mail blind. I couldn't. And it was just too much.
Every day you would get
many.
The mail.
And lots of people
now,
all at once.
And I would say if there was somebody in your neighborhood to talk to, I think they would get a better response in many instances in some neighborhoods. So, you know, that's the challenge, you know, in terms of messaging. They lost some key rate in Hudson Valley, the head of the Democratic Congressional Committee, Sean Maloney. I think he lost his race, and he was the one responsible for trying to defend the Democrats in the House. But I think it looks like he's going to lose that district in Hudson Valley. And so, you know, it was a mixed bag, but the red wave surely was not what they expected.
You know,
it ended up being
no red wave coming. There was no red wave. I mean, I never thought there was a red wave coming
Here's where the challenge is. The biggest challenge for Democrats wasn't your traditional voting. The party historically always loses significantly. The president's party loses significantly in the midterms. So we beat a historical trend with this. But more than that, here's what was hitting Democrats that some of it they had nothing to do with. This inflation cycle, you know, there are a large number of Americans who vote clearly from an economic interest. And this is a very – they got an easy formula. Here's their formula, because President Reagan, you know, even though I disagree with most of the things that President Reagan was about, he got one – he was brilliant at honing a message in. He asked one simple question in an election cycle. Am I better off than I was four years ago? And so that's a classic, very basic question. So for economic voters, they could care less about party. They'll switch parties in 5 minutes. They could be loyal Democrats, and they'll switch party in 5 minutes if they feel that the economy's so bad. And they just say, who's ever in charge, when the economy is good, we're going to reward them and let them stay. But if the economy is bad, we're going to punish them and kick them out. And so that was one of the major challenges the Democratic Party, with all the stuff that they did, the infrastructure bill, the CHIP bill, getting resources to struggling families during the pandemic. All those good things were overshadowed by this whole economic cycle of inflation. When you go to the supermarket, I don't care who you are, when you go to the supermarket and the milk is going up, the bread is going up, how you get to the supermarket is going up.
Listen, the going up is going up.
So that's the cycle that the Democrats, you know, we're all affected by the environment in which we live, and particularly in the political, every politician is affected by the environment that he is. And some of those environmental things have nothing to do with what the government is. The Federal Reserve's decisions, figuring out how they're going to contain inflation, lifting interest rates. So now you can't sell your house because the interest rates are high. You might be in the life cycle where, you know, I'm cashing in. I want a smaller house. Now I can't sell my house. So you blame that on the government, because first of all, even though the Federal Reserve is a separate system and the people who run it are picked
and,
by the
and
president.
I wonder if they want to do a show, Wayne Smith, on the Federal Reserve as well, because this seems like some big mystery, and there's a whole lot of talk.
What they do here in that title is federal, so they think that's the government, and it's really an independent bank. So all they know is the economy's bad, and so those what I call them economic voters. Democracy is fine, but I can't. You know, their view is, you know, whether I vote or don't have the right to vote, if I can't eat, if I can't pay the rent or the mortgage, if I can't get to work,
exactly,
that's all I'm concerned about. You know, and so you know those people will come out. And
well, because that's
interesting.
That's your, yeah, go ahead, Wayne. What was one
the interesting thing? You had significant voter turnout. You know, there was a lot of energy around that election. I would like to see more turnout in the African American communities. We can always lift our numbers up, and I think if we can get more people out in our communities, we could change the dynamic of many of these elections.
Absolutely.
But the turnout was, you know,
you heard democracy was on the ballot. And I think was. And I think the personal freedom, people don't want to go back.
I think that saved the Democrats from the red wave. Between the abortion issue and women, look, in a place like Kansas, they voted, you know, they did a referendum, then voted to say we would like to keep abortion rights in our state. They're kind of viewed as a conservative state. But women actually spoke, and their supporters spoke loudly in that state. You know, there was so many strands, and it politics is, at the end of the day, whoever gets the most votes out wins. It's a very simple formula. And so after all I'm for this, I'm against this, I'm for that, you got to get your base voters out to vote. And that's why I always, when you call, if I have the time, I always come on your show, because I think you reach a constituency that can be very powerful. And that constituency,
What I want to talk with you about. It's as if we are in sync. You've read my mind. Hey, we talked about this way back years ago, Wayne Smith. We have. We talked about this. I want to turn. We have about 1,000 members in the Hair Radio Association that I'm so very proud of. You guys out there listening, you can be a member of the Hair Radio Association. It's on Facebook. It's a Facebook group. Simply go there, and you can easily become a member there. My concern is this. I would like to take this association, take the people that we have. I have tons of followers around the country and literally around the world, as you know. I'd like to build a coalition of hair industry people and use this constituency to reflect on change and policy that can better, you know, uplift our community. God's planet Earth do we get this done? Because I am done sitting on the sidelines. I can't take it anymore. Who are wise and smart enough to lead must do so. If not, we're getting pulled along by extremist rhetoric and folks who have selfish agenda and don't care at all about the ramifications of their behavior. Even the media to me is complicit quite a bit. And when I saw that they didn't care, to me, this is what I got from it. I got that the media, if I could create this discourse to drum up viewers, they didn't care if the outcome, it's even better for them if the outcome is these extremist, Republican views and people so that they can, it'll cause more things for them to report on, and drum up more business. So I said, oh my gosh, they're literally trying to tap into this awful rhetoric to promote their own viewership. They don't happens to all of us who got to go in the streets and what's happening out here. And, you know, they know that by promoting this negative discourse, it's going to lead us off the cliff, and they don't care. And here they're putting all this stuff in front of you over and over and over again, trying to make a false equivalency so that you can think it's normal that you just have two candidates, opposing candidates, where the real truth is you have someone who's going to limit your movement, period.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But you don't hear that coming from the TV media.
Yeah, I think there are many voices out there in media today. The media landscape is so bifurcated. So you've got let's talk about TV a little bit. You got MSNBC, and you've got Fox News. So people view MSNBC as a more progressive, Democratic leaning.
Yeah, you've got the blue and red channels.
And your traditional networks try to be kind of middle of the road. So you got ABC, NBC, CBS.
Right.
They try to be more middle of the road. But then you've got ethnic media. You got ethnic media. So you've got a ton of African American cable channels now. You've got Latino channels.
Exactly.
And so the Latino community is interesting. In some places,
they're starting to grow in the Republican Party. They've been historically Democratic, I think. But there's a lot of talk that you have certain pockets that are picking up in the political world.
I think Florida is one of them where you have a large Cuban population that view the Republicans in more opposition to Castro. So you have that element in Florida. So the Republicans did very well in Florida. The other thing the Republicans are doing that that maybe the Democrats could do better. They are making the investments trying to do the Latino outreach. So I think they got a 5% swing. I just saw some numbers, and I think they got about, the Democrats got about 65% of the vote in the last national election, and it went down in this election to about 60%. So you had a 5% swing from what I saw in the to the Republican column among the Latino community. So, you know, it's we're in a highly competitive time. And so here's the other thing, because there's always been black Republicans. And so some of that is based on where you are economically. Some people think because they have a few dollars that, you know, that the Republicans are better for them from a tax standpoint. So whatever their ethnic group or wherever they came from terms of, you know, if they come from a poor family and they are now doing well, their views around politics may change. So, you know, America, the one thing about the American democracy is good. All these ideas influence the process. And if you're in the influence business, because if you're in media, if you're in politics, you're in the persuasion field. And so you're trying to reach people. So they go where the eyeballs go. And I got to tell you, this is a sad commentary on the American public, that media ratings jumped while Trump was running for office and while he was president, because he's such a crazy character. It's more of a comedy show than any real policy. So, but eyeballs are there. And a lot of that TV energy died when he kind of left the scene. So they're trying to capture some of that. I think you're right to the extent that.
That's exactly right. They're trying mm-hmm. to recapture that because they
that
know
interest
that
from the American public. Mm-hmm.
What you have that, and you—that's what he's about. He's a person who
well,
only wants
if
attention.
If nothing else,
right? He's
yeah,
a showman.
So that's the danger of media. Donald Trump is a creation of media. From his day, he even knew that by having a media presence in New York City when he was a developer, that many of his deals wouldn't get the same scrutiny because Donald Trump's on TV. He's viewed as a success story. So bankers closed a blind eye and did loans that they wouldn't do to you or I or somebody.
And NBC did the same thing when they gave him a platform, you know. So nobody talked about that, but NBC gave him a platform with that defunct show.
Sure, with The Apprentice.
And here's where we are today. Now we all have
today,
to suffer the consequences of this never-ending drama, and it's awful.
So what often happens is you have to create the alternative news cycle. Let me tell you something. The conservatives did some. There's a lesson to learn sometimes from the people you disagree with. Because I remember when there wasn't no Fox News. You remember that.
Right.
We're old enough to remember
that's
when there
right.
wasn't a Fox News.
Exactly.
And what they did was created an alternative news vision of the world. And it became the top-rated viewed network. So, and then they bought the sport. They bought the Super Bowl. They made so much money.
Well, you know, to me, Wayne, you can always put out lies. You can always change viewpoints. But the media understands that. The media knows very well that you can say whatever you want, and there will be people who believe you. And they understand that power, and they know how to wield it. We, as the folks out here in the communities, that incorporate America, we've got to stand up, and we've got to stop paying attention to liars. We've got to throw these horrible, horrible self-serving politicians who have been horrible for this economy and tell them a big lie. That's one of the reasons why Zeldin here in New York didn't make it. He was 100% involved in all that chaos from Trump. And then have the nerve to be talking about safety while you were supporting the gun, not voting to restrict the guns and having
guns
out here, concealed weapons here in New York? Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
you think that folks here in New York are so foolish to believe, you know, your new thinking? It's too much. It's too much. Let's send them packing.
But a lot of
the fellas, just send them packing.
Yeah, a lot of the Trump candidates went down last night, too.
They did.
A lot of the candidates did. Yeah, a lot of the Trump candidates went down last night. And so he's got to be sitting
that
back.
That DeSantis guy is going to come up out of Florida. And here we got Trump 2.0. Is that what I'm seeing? Because that's what the media is trying to. Now he's getting all the political press behind him. All the media is trying to DeSantis. Knowing that this man is going to come and make things horrible for everybody. The media knows.
So here's the story. And I don't know if you, the Republican Party, when George Bush II became president, they had to recast because the Republican Party was dead at that time. He captured the White House back for them. But what he did was he tried to recast the Republican Party. I can see them trying to do this a little bit kind of around the edges with DeSantis, here, for example. So George Bush II said we've got to create a kinder and gentler party. In fact, they came up with the concept of what was it called? They called it a different kind of conservatism, almost like a charitable conservatism, where they were more humane about their messaging and so forth. Mm. And so Trump is so abrasive, the issues around his own personal conduct. There are even some Republicans who are very conservative, said Trump is really not our guy. He's got a lot of issues. He's been married 100 times, this, that, and the other. So they have issues with Trump from what this morality standpoint. You know, the accusations by the women, some of those trials are still going on.
It goes on and on. We could talk literally till next week.
DeSantis doesn't have those issues as Trump does. He has the same crazy policies, but he doesn't have personal baggage issues.
Right.
So that's what
the baggage that Trump has. And those two apparently don't seem to get along.
Well, he called them, to tell you, Trump is affected by it because he called them, during this recent election, he called them Ronald D. Sanctimonious.
Exactly.
That's what he called them.
Trump always has a name for somebody.
He's a comedian.
Well, why don't we give him a name? Loser.
Yeah, well, listen, he may not. He says he's going to announce, but I don't think the numbers were so big enough.
Well,
he said he was going
to
announce.
Here's what he's trying to do. You know, he's that stall, and you know, until it goes away or changes the narrative. But the thing is, the 14th, it is a big day because there's a lot happening against this man's, his whole thing out here. Listen, we've got a lot that we're going to continue to cover. Wayne, I'm hoping that you can come back on Friday.
I think we're going to have some of these things.
This has been a great show. You really help us out to understand and make sense of all of this. We want to remind everybody that TV actress Jasmine Guy from A Different World, we'll be here on the show tomorrow, so we're real excited about that.
Hey, wow.
And then, the following day, we have the gentleman who played Professor Ogilvy on The Parkers. We're talking about Mr. Dorian Wilson.
Yeah.
And then the following day, we got Kyle, who from Living Single, who will be T.C. Carson.
T.C. Carson.
Yes, he'll be with us like on Tuesday. So we've got a superstar lineup over the next week. We're so excited.
Oh, wow.
All of them are associated with the new BET. Well, you're talking at the Hair Radio Morning Show. You know,
right.
We go in when yes. And so we're
all
so
right.
excited. Yeah, they're all associated with a brand new BET Plus holiday movie called A Wesley Christmas. And we're going to be talking all about it in the days ahead. So real excited. Now, Wayne, when you get a chance, I cannot wait. We got to figure out some kind of way to catch up so that we can figure out what we need to do to move that coalition forward. And
right,
you
absolutely.
The,
we'll talk
the,
soon.
The biggest name out here in this political world that has helped us so much on this show. Now, Wayne, I want to spend a couple of minutes before I know this. We're going to be on Friday. We'll be, you know, chatting with you again on Friday, right here at 8 o'clock between 8 and 9 Eastern. Can you tell us your legacy? You have a huge legacy. Wayne Smith, 12 years the mayor in Irvington, New Jersey. So, Wayne,
we talked
about that. Talk a little bit about your legacy.
Well, so one of the things that I think we left a soundtrack, we left the city in a sounder financial position than they've been. So they haven't had to struggle with the same financial issues that I had to struggle when I assumed office. We were literally in bankruptcy. And so that's some of the development in the city. The city was not in development mode when I started. We got it in development mode. And some of the developers who we helped get their start are doing even more projects than they did. But, you know, the first thing is to get investment interest. And these were minority developers. We have a sister named Adina Bayo, who I got to do an IHOP. And she took over the Irvington General Hospital and put housing on it. She's now doing more housing down the street. She's expanded her food empire. She owns 3 or 4 IHOPs. She's created her own brand called Cornbread. These were people I worked with as a part of my image to reform the economic life for the township of Irvington. So some of that stuff still lasts, and some of those people are still doing great work. Many of the staff members that we got gave an opportunity to grow are still working in government. So that's tremendous. And then part two of that is the living legacy of the things that I'm doing as a business person now. So I have a client, a huge broadband guy who's bringing broadband to other communities around the state and the nation. So those kinds of things still keep me very much active in helping the public, but also trying to do well while you do good.
And Wayne, whatever we can do to help with any of your projects, you know, we are here. That's what we're all about here at the Hair Radio Show and the network and our product line. Everything that we do it emanates out of community. So we appreciate all of your efforts and that you continue on this journey to help and benefit the community. And we appreciate that. So, yes, Wayne, we have to catch up. I'm going to send you a message and we'll set up a little conference meeting and we'll go over some of these ways to be pointed in the right direction so we can get this coalition going. We have to stand up. We got to do what we can. So thank you again, Wayne Smith. Awesome job. Awesome job.
All right. Talk to you soon.
All right.
Talk to
you
soon.
See you Friday.
All right, Michael. Take care. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Michael Hopkins, great job from Wayne Smith. We just appreciate him so much. You know, have to say, did you, was that not great?
Oh, yes, it was. I mean, I love the way he just educates you on the political process. And he comes up with angles and things that most of us wouldn't even think about. But because he's an insider. Yeah. He's been there. He understands.
Exactly. Yeah. We're very proud of him. And so I'm going to ask Wayne, as you guys heard, to help us to build that constituency that we have a wonderful hair and beauty constituency here in America. With tons and tons of stylists and folks who can have more of a say-so in policy making. And that's what I want to create, that constituency. I want to cultivate it so we can get the folks in front of our audience and our fans and let them explain some of the decisions that they have made and several not on our behalf. So that's why it's important to create that coalition, and we're going to do that. We're not just going to sit by, as I said, those who can should do.
So true. So true.
Yeah. So tomorrow, Michael, as you heard, we've got a celebrity lineup kicking off with the incredible one and only TV superstar Jasmine Guy. You guys know her from the Top 10 Hit of Different Worlds. And she will be with us tomorrow to talk about the incredible new holiday movie that's at BET Plus. So we'll be talking about all that, along with her working with her new co-stars on this wonderful holiday movie. And I think it's one of the first that BET Plus is putting out. So I can't wait to hear all of that and whatever else she would like to get into. Plus, we're going to be chatting with a couple of her co-stars. So I cannot wait. There's a Terrell Hill and Sydney Mitchell, so that also co-star with her. So we're going to hear from them as well. So this is coming up tomorrow. So I'm super excited about it. Michael Hopkins.
So am I.
Yes. Now, we heard from you at the top of today's show. We heard an entire new interview. So listen, great job. I just want to say thank you to Michael Hopkins for helping us to hold it down today, and our incredible guest live on the air, Wayne Smith. And we'll see you back here tomorrow at 6 in the morning for the next edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. Thank you for voting, and just thank you so much for being a part of our success. Michael, great job today.
Thank you, Carrie. Excellent show.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the show. All right, here's our outro, everybody. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Make it a good day. We just did. Well, it's that time to bring this episode of the Hair Radio Morning Show to a close. But it does not end here. The show continues over at our 24/7 Hair Radio broadcast network at www.hairradio.com. Now, I must thank today's great guests and our legacy advertisers. These are the folks who've been supporting our show over the years, including Dr. Raglan, Yolanda Raglan at fixyourfeet.com. They are the very best in foot care. She has two locations, one in New York City and the other in Maryland. I also want to take a moment to acknowledge the